Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman, founder of the Dementia Whisperers Incorporated. Laura Wayman, nationally recognized expert on dementia and author of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care, published by Johns Hopkins University Press, joins you and 16 million caregivers with real answers and help, with love, wisdom, and compassion for your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Call in at 929-477-1393. That's 929-477-1393. And now, live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Hello, listeners. Are you caring for a loved one, a resident or client who's presenting dementia symptoms and challenging behaviors? Our vision is to open up discussion in order to greatly improve quality of care and excellence in service to individuals with Alzheimer's disease or any dementia-related illnesses, and to lend a reassuring hand to the caregivers and families. And this is an interactive call-in show, and we do want to hear from our listeners. Today, we have a fantastic guest. It's going to be Heather McGuire, a soul midwife. You want to find out and stick around for that. Heather McGuire, our guest today. And, of course, that call-in line is always the same, 929-477-1393. And I remind you, Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer, has a very generous offer. When you call with a question or comment, you receive a copy of her award-winning book from Johns Hopkins University. So I implore you to do that. Make the call. No question is too out of the realm of the discussion here on the Dementia Whisperer. This is a co-host, Scott Cluthie, and now, without further ado, it is the Dementia Whisperer. It's Laura Wayman. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Scott. Oh, it's always so good to hear your wonderful professional radio voice. It is just so warm and comforting and inviting, and that's exactly what we want to present here on this show. We want to invite caregivers of all kinds and just the whole world to come and listen and learn about dementia, become dementia aware. And so, Scott, before we get into our discussion today, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Well, you're very kind, Laura, as always, to ask me to do that. But I've worked with Laura now for, I don't know, Laura, has it been it feels like a decade.
I think so.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And so we've worked with many different forms of media and become fast friends, as well as her husband and my wife, Steve and Faye. And the work with Laura on the Dementia Whisperer is special to me because I do work in a lot of various segments of senior care. I support my wife in helping all seniors, veterans, and people with any kind of hearing disability with the American Disability Act. I've worked as a representative for home care, worked to produce media around that, and of course a long career, over 40 years now in various media, doing lifestyle, enhanced lifestyle, wellness, body, mind, and spirit work with people from John Gray to Deepak Chopra, and now doing something really great, doing a live TV show every Monday evening over at my Love Cafe group on Facebook, Love Cafe with Scott Cluthie. We have a live TV show every Monday with outstanding guests, so we continue the tradition there. So thank you for asking me, Laura.
Oh, of course, and thank you for sharing all that wonderful support and resources that you offer to our world. We have lots and lots of challenges, and it's always nice to know that there's someone like you who's going to give us a little bit of support and help and love coming directly there from Houston. So thank you for all of that. And I want to address our wonderful listening audience because we want you to know you're not alone. Sometimes in this dementia journey, it can feel like you're alone. And so if you have any worries, concerns, if you have anxieties, call us on this show and we can provide you with inspiration, encouragement in the way of education on your dementia journey. You have tuned into the right place. stay with us today. This hour, we're going to be talking all about the newest information in the world of dementia, how to better manage symptoms, and we're going to be talking about some really very deep and sensitive, a very hard part about dementia today. We're going to be talking about end of life, and we always are supporting that person with dementia with a quality of life. And now we want to talk about how they can have a quality end of life, which is an interesting perspective. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about news and views from the world of dementia. We want to welcome everyone to this segment of our show. And Scott, would you please share with us some of the news and views that you've gathered? We were talking a little bit earlier, and I'm very interested in hearing about some of these articles and this information that you've rounded up for us today.
Thank you. Dementia is a pandemic around the world. And of course, Alzheimer's just is a major slice of the pie of dementia, but it is a world event. And so we don't turn our eyes only inward in the U.S. or Canada, for that matter, but look out into the world where research has we never know where research breakthroughs and miraculous intervention will happen. So I find that a lot of the information I'm going to share in these news stories does come from Europe and other parts of the world. There seems to be much greater emphasis there on a lot of research ongoing in many ways. First one is written by Sarah Bosley. Chronic heavy drinking leads to serious risks of dementia. This study's been picked up by CNN and others just released this week. Those who drink enough to be hospitalized are at serious risk of vascular dementia and Alzheimer's disease, the experts are saying, and they're putting themselves in deep risk. This largest study of its kind ever conducted. Research is published in the Lancet Public Health Journal and provides powerful evidence that people who drink enough to end up in the hospital are putting themselves at serious risk. It will also raise questions for moderate drinkers about the possible long-term consequences of their social habit. The study, which used the French National Hospital Discharge Database, looked at more than 1 million people diagnosed with dementia between 2008 and 2013. That's a big database to work with. Older people drinking too much could create a time bomb, says the doctor involved. More than a third, 38% of the 57,000 cases of early-onset dementia were directly alcohol-related, and 18% had an additional diagnosis of alcohol use disorders. Overall, alcohol use disorders were associated with a 3 times greater risk of all times of dementia. That's right. Dr. Sarah Imariso, head of the research at Alzheimer's Research UK, said as this study only looked at people who had been admitted to the hospital due to chronic heavy drinking, it doesn't reveal the full extent of the link between alcohol use and dementia risk. Previous research had indicated that even moderate drinking may have a negative impact on brain health, and people shouldn't be under the impression that only drinking to the point of hospitalization carries a risk, and I hope I never reach that point, not being somebody who really drinks at all. I don't think I will, hopefully. Experts say the new research should change attitudes. What's most surprising about this paper is that it has taken us this long to recognize that alcohol misuse and dependence are such potent risk factors for the development of dementia, so says Robert Howard, professor of old age psychiatry at the University College in London. Interesting, public's invited to get involved, also in England, in dementia research. This is where they really open the doors, because a lot of people don't even think about dementia, don't even know what the word really means until it, what, enters their lives. And then it's, well, you're getting behind the eight ball fast. People over the age of 50 and without a diagnosis of dementia are being asked to consider taking part in dementia prevention research. And members of the public can find out more at the first Bristol Dementia Research Showcase. Now, that's next Tuesday. The free event is organized by the Remember Group, Research into Memory, the Brain, and Dementia. That's what it stands for. A Bristol-based research group jointly led by the University of Bristol and a North Bristol NHS Trust. And, of course, that's all about the National Health Trust. Lifestyle changes prevent cognitive decline even in genetically susceptible individuals. This is from the University of Eastern Finland. Enhanced lifestyle counseling prevents cognitive decline, even in people who are carriers of the APOE4 gene, a common risk factor of Alzheimer's disease, according to a new study just published in JAMA, J-A-M-A, Neurology. The two-year FINGER trial involved 60 to 77-year-old people living in Finland with risk factors for memory disorders. And the study participants were divided into two groups. One of the groups was given regular lifestyle counseling, the other enhanced lifestyle counseling. Enhanced counseling involved nutrition counseling, physical and cognitive exercises, and support in managing the risk of cardiovascular diseases. And the early findings from the FINGER trial have shown that the regular lifestyle counseling group had a significantly increased risk of cognitive and functional impairment compared to the intervention group, that is, the group really receiving enhanced counseling, things like nutrition, exercise, cognitive exercise, physical exercise, and support in managing the risk of cardiovascular diseases. So those are three pretty big stories right there. And I didn't know, Laura, did you want me to share the 12 principles of soul midwifery? Are we going to use that with our wonderful soul midwife today?
Hold on that. If you could just jump to the end stage of dementia care, what you need to know, because we're really going to be talking about the end stage. We're going to be talking about the end of life. So just a couple
yes.
points out of that article.
Sure. Very good. Thank you. This is some things you need to be cognitive of as you move closer to those the final goal line, as they say. End stage dementia care, what you need to know. It can be traumatic to watch a loved one with dementia nearing the end of their life. And boy, do we know that. But knowing what to expect in the end stage of dementia may bring you some comfort. Find out what might happen. Dementia is not a terminal illness, but it does tend to shorten lives. On average, a person diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, for example, will live for another 10 to 12 years, actually. And many of those years can be made happy and enjoyable. However, none of us are immortal. No matter how well you care for a person with dementia or how much you love them, at some point their dementia journey will reach its end. As difficult as that may be to accept, many people do find the final stage of the illness easier to handle it if they're prepared and can do their best to allow a loved one to experience a peaceful and dignified death. So respect their wishes. Hopefully you will be already have given end-of-life care some thought and have some idea what the person you're caring for would like to happen. Perhaps you encourage them to make an advanced decision or have a DNAR, that's D-N-A-R, do not attempt resuscitation order, in place. Ideally, they will have told you that their views about this important issue, such as whether they like to remain at home and who they may want to visit, including spiritual advisors, of course. And here's a tip. If your loved one has refused to discuss this subject with you, it's worth asking other friends and family if they've mentioned anything to them. Sometimes people with dementia don't want to share this kind of information with the children of younger relatives, but we'll talk about it with friends and peers. Now, what are the warning signs of life? Uh-huh.
And Scott, I think that this is a really good time for us to talk about bringing in other people to help us with end of life, and a perfect time to introduce Heather, because this tip is saying if your loved one isn't wanting to discuss this with you, there are people such as Heather and what she does that can help kind of sort through those feelings where they might not want to have a
yeah.
family member present. And she's going
transition
to talk about
time.
That. Yeah.
Perfect.
So if you could bring Heather in, introduce her, I think that Heather would be willing to talk about how sometimes this happens, that she needs to be kind of a surrogate family member with some of these difficult conversations.
Very good. Our guest this week live on the Dementia Whisperer is Heather McGuire. She is a soul midwife, or death doula, as it's known, as an 11th hour companion. She, along with others who have been called a transition guide or midwife for the dying, with each having their own inherent gift to help others cross over the threshold. It certainly is a unique experience many times. Heather is honored to have been called called to this work, and today she'll be sharing and bringing awareness of what she does for others. And just my FUPAs, because my printer decided it didn't have enough ink. So I'm talk about reading between the lines. So, Heather, help me. Let's say hello and welcome to our guest for Live with the Dementia Whisperer. It's Heather McGuire, soul midwife. Hi, Heather.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me here.
Absolutely.
Hi, Heather. Oh, it's so good to hear your voice. I am so excited for you to share your calling, your work. This is just, even though it's a real scary topic, as you know, there are so many families who need to hear this from your comforting and sensitive and loving voice. And so, Heather, tell us a little bit about what in the world is a soul midwife and what do you do?
Well, as a soul midwife, we bring a healing presence. When I'm sitting with the dying, it's not about doing, it's about being. It's about being radically present. So you're hearing in between the lines of, referring to your lines there, sir, hearing what's not being spoken. You're being able to witness and see where families are not communicating. And very often, as you were leading to, they don't want to talk to their families about this stuff. And I'm there as a non-medical person, so I don't have a stethoscope. I'm not charting their vitals. And they open up to me. They tell me, you know, I don't want so-and-so here, or I'm embarrassed about this. I'm afraid that I won't have any dignity. What's going to happen? So-and-so is still mad at me. How do I make this better? And that type of thing is what often gets shared with a soul midwife.
Do they ask you, Heather, when you're present with them, do they ask you questions about what this might feel like or what the experience might be like? Are they frightened?
Yes, yes, and yes. And depending on what their situation is, we gently guide them into educating them on what that looks like. More often than not, it's going to be the dying person asking that question rather than the family member, unless, of course, this is an individual who has had dementia for a while. And then that's the flip side of that conversation. Are they fearful? Absolutely. I see that over and over again. In particular, when one is bringing their family home to take care of them there, they don't know what to expect. So I'll end up getting a call several days in, and they're just beside themselves wondering how much longer is this going to be, and they need that support of somebody who has sat at death's door that's not going to be shaken by it, that can tend the fire, give the hugs, give the support to the whole family and community that is there.
And
not to interrupt, Laura, I want you to know we have a caller. And caller, we will come to you when Laura's ready to take that call, and look forward to your input as well today here on Live with the Dementia Whisperer.
Oh, great. We'll bring them in here in just a minute. So I have been in the presence of Heather many times. We've been working together. We've been at a conference together. We've sat and had a meal together. And I will tell you that in her presence, she's very calming. I would want her by my side if I was afraid. And I really want everyone to know that that's an important part of what she does, but also her knowledge, her training, her experience, her sharing this with others and learning. So, Heather, tell us the story about the gentleman who indeed, he was in skilled nursing, and he had Alzheimer's or some other cause of dementia, and how you held his hand and communicated because that was the only way he could communicate. Tell that story. I love that story.
Oh, absolutely. And Laura, I would be honored to sit with you if you were fearful. Yes, this was a gentleman in a skilled nursing facility, and he had lost his ability to speak any longer. I had been visiting him for several months, once or twice a week, and we knew each other's presence. We knew each other's energy, even though we could not have a conversation together. We would hold hands. And this, so many years later, still gets me choked up because it's one of the most heartful stories of my lifetime, and that's what took me down this path. His case manager called that morning and said, "Heather, he's not going to make it through today. This is it. We need you here." And I, absolutely. And so I drive up to the nursing home, and as I'm walking down the hallway, I can already see from the end of the corridor that his light has been turned off. I get to the threshold of the doorway, and his roommate has been removed. Like, not just the human, his bed, his dresser was completely gone, because death is something that our culture is so fearful of. They're not even experiencing it where you see so much of it, which is where we die in nursing homes. So I go and sit on the floor next to Alvin. He had suffered a series of many strokes, and so that was actually the safest place for him to be, was on the mattress down towards the floor. It was so heartbreaking, though, to see my friend lying there on the floor dying by himself. There happened to be, which I didn't notice until I walked into the room, two employees that were in the room, and we all kind of took each other off guard, and they asked me what I was doing there. And I said I was here to be with my friend. And they had told me that he was almost dead and he wouldn't know that I was even there. So I paused and said, "Well, I'm still going to stay and you're welcome to be with me, but I'm going to go and be with him." So I tidy up his face and put on his Ray Charles, which was his favorite music, and I curl up next to the bed and I take his hand and I tell him, "I'm here, Alvin. I've got you, and I'm not leaving you." And his heart rate started increasing, and tears started streaming down his cheeks. So I hold on even tighter. And after about 5 or 10 minutes, he takes our fingers and intertwines them. And he takes one finger, and he taps me. So I take that mirroring finger, and I tap him back. And we continue this back and forth conversation with our hands for about 20 minutes. And then he held on really tight and took his last and final breath. And it was just so incredible. I was just streaming tears of gratitude to be able to be there for him in that moment. He had, I believe it was 4 children in the Denver area that for whatever reason, they weren't able to be there with him. And I feel that everybody deserves to have loving care and attention at the end of their life and have their life witnessed as their last sacred moment here.
And I love, love that story, because just like Laura Wayman, the dementia whisperer, what you did is you brought comfort, sweetness, and wisdom to the end of his life on his dementia journey. And it is truly our calling, you and I, Heather, to bring that quality of life during the middle of their dementia journey, the beginning, and as well as the end. And we can all help family members come to a point where they're more comfortable doing this too. And I think the way to do that is through education. Just like educating someone to be dementia aware, we need to help educate people to become more comfortable and dying aware. So, you know, what are the things that we want to have people understand? And so we're going to start talking about that here in a minute, but I would like to give our guest an opportunity to come in and talk, and they may ask me specifically about dementia. They may be asking you about soul midwifery. I never say that right. You helped me the other day. Soul midwifery. So let's see what they're wanting to share. And I always welcome someone, because it takes courage to call and share about your dementia journey. And today it might be a journey on the end of life and not even involve dementia. So Scott, let's bring on our guests and see what they have to say.
Laura, with that, they left us. I think they got intimidated. So, no, you don't have to be on air. You can call on the phone and listen to the show. But I wanted to ask you, Heather, I've worked and done quite a few shows in the past with the Levines. Do you know Stephen Levine and their work with the dying and transitions? I just wondered.
I recognize his name. I've not met him.
Mm-hmm. I also experienced with my late wife her transition. I stayed with her during hospice and had some remarkable experiences with her, and also experienced family members not coming in the room. I think some of this is grounded in our own fear of mortality to some degree, but it's nothing that most people would ever admit. But this is, that's
mm-hmm.
just my thought. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, Heather, how'd you find yourself get into this unique, life-changing career?
You know, it was truly that Alvin story. You know, I was a mama at home baking cookies. I did not have any interest, any calling, any pull to the deaf world. I had not even lost my grandparents at this time. And when I experienced that with Alvin, it opened my eyes to something. And it opened my heart. It broke my heart open. And then a few months later, a administrator from another nursing home had heard about the experience and said, oh, my goodness, let's call Heather in. And I did it again. And this pattern kept happening over and over, and each death was just as miraculous and beautiful in its own right as every person's birth story. And it just pulled me in a way I never would have imagined. About 4 or 5 years ago, I was going back and pondering what it was I wanted to be when my children were young, and I was a solo parent. I had wanted to be a midwife, deliver 8 babies, and then realized this was not the path for a single parent. you can't ask somebody to hold their contractions while you take your kids to school. So as I was researching and going back, going, gosh, what was it I wanted to do? I remembered that and started the journey of looking to what it would be to be a midwife, and I came across the term death doula. And I was taken off guard. Oh, how morbid. And I immediately went down the rabbit hole and went, oh, my goodness, this has been the favorite part of the last 15 years of my work, was helping people die. As a non-clinical, non-medical person, this was it. And so I did everything that I could to educate myself more. I took classes through the Conscious Dying Institute, layers and layers and layers of classes working with parents. I have taken classes with Sacred Crossings in Los Angeles with Reverend Olivia Bearham, and that's more after-death care, holding the 3-day vigil and preparing and anointing the body. And there are people all over the country, all over the world, that have immense knowledge, and each one brings a different gift to the people who come and learn from them. It's
so
been extraordinary.
Every single journey, the crossing of the threshold, everyone's story is unique. So we're going to take our half show break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit about how unique this is and how you as a soul midwife have to change your approach with every single person to help understand how to make their journey crossing that threshold a very, we're going to call it quality, although that seems very strange. We're going to talk about some of these words and how to communicate this very important message without that word you just said, morbid, because morbid comes up because we just don't simply understand. So we're going to come back here in a minute. Scott's going to take us into our half-show break, and so everybody hang on, don't go away, and we've got lots more to talk about.
And by the way, I just like for our listeners to know, Heather McGuire, how do people connect with you, Soul Midwife, in case they have an interest in your services and finding out more how they can support their loved ones in their big transition?
Certainly, thank you. You can get to my website through either heatherlemmcguire.com or yourmidwifeattheendoflife.com. And there is also a Facebook page by that name as well.
And yourmidwifeattheendoflife.com is fully spelled out?
Correct.
All right. And I'm trying to write as fast as I can, which is not as fast as I talk, believe me. All right. We'll be back with more with our special guest today, Heather McGuire, Soul Midwife, and, of course, Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer. This is Scott Cluthie here, co-host, and it's great to have you all out there. Remind you, the call-in line for guests is 929-477-1393, and we'd love to hear from you. And you will receive a free copy of Laura Wayman's book as well. So we'll be right back. Stay with us, and great to have you out there today, listening to the Dementia Whisperer. You're listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Call in with your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Call 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. We'll be right back.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for
taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 4 number one albums. 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 7 Grammy Awards. 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism. 1 in 68. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks, it's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. We love to hear from our listeners. Call in at 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. And now, Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer. Yes, author of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care. And Laura, you've got a second edition now with Johns Hopkins. Don't you update it with new information, more relevant info?
Yes, I do, and I am so proud of that. You know, in 2011, my first edition was published, A Loving Approach to Dementia Care by Johns Hopkins University Press. And I have had the wonderful opportunity this year in 2018, in January, my second edition came out. And it is, I've been given the honor that this is a 36-hour day book. Now, many of you are probably familiar with the book 36-Hour Day. It is a very, very popular book for caregivers, and it is published by the same publisher, Johns Hopkins University Press. And so since my book has become a bestseller, it is so much in demand. They knocked it up into this very prestigious category of being a 36-hour day book. And so I do want to give that to anybody, like Scott had talked about. if you want to call in and talk, I do want to get that book into your hands. So, you know, even if you just want to call and say, hi, Dementia Whisperer, send me the book, we're more than happy. We just want to know that you're out there listening and we're giving you support. And if you're courageous, like I said, if you're courageous enough to share your journey, you don't have to tell us your name. We can get that later so that we can get you the book. Don't be afraid to call and share about your challenges, your successes. We want to learn from you as well. So I want to talk some more about this whole, what does a soul midwife do? And with Heather McGuire, our wonderful guest today. She is also a very dear friend, and we've worked together. And so when I hear her talking and sharing her experiences when she is helping someone who is in the midst of dying, and that's so scary to talk about. And like she had said earlier in our show about how that word brings about these feelings of, oh, that's morbid, or we don't want to talk about that. And just her, the beauty and the way that she describes this experience, it just really helps to educate us. And I want our listeners to understand that they can reach out to her to learn more about dying, to set in place a plan of action that is going to help them give their loved ones or themselves this gift that she brings. So I want to bring her on again. She's patiently waiting. And hi again, Heather. Thanks so much for being here today.
Hi, I am here.
Oh, good. So let's help people understand what the difference between a soul midwife and a hospice person. So if you could kind of explain, what is hospice and what is it that you do that might be a little different?
Absolutely. To make it really simple, hospice beautifully takes care of the medical care of the dying. They are making sure that they have a nurse who's coming out to see them in the home, who's taking care of any bed sores, wound care, taking care of their medication, making sure that they're not in pain. That we have a CNA. They'll have a CNA coming out several times a week, helping give the person a bath, to wash their hair, to change the bed sheets, to bring more supplies in. And then a soul midwife, we work in tandem with hospice teams. Hospice teams, whether it's in a private residence, in a nursing home, in hospitals, they have so many patients to tend to. These teams don't have the hours and hours to sit with just one person. So the response is usually absolute relief when a soul midwife is able to take the baton and hold the fort down. We're offering companionship on this spiritual journey that they're on. We're also guiding the family. Gentle guidance is another role of a soul midwife. The family members might be so lost just in a well of grief and a swirl of emotions, anticipating this big change that is about to come. Having somebody present to guide and model the care in the moment is absolutely beautiful and warming to their heart. It gives them a moment to take a break and feel some relief themselves. Does that help?
Absolutely. It helps me to understand, and I'm sure it helps everyone out there who's listening to understand. And we haven't had the opportunity as a culture to really ask for this kind of support. And I'm talking about here in the United States. Is around the world, is there other cultures who utilize this helpful career, helpful individual or person or organization like you? Is there other cultures across the United States that do use soul midwives more?
Yes. Doulas, soul midwives have been doing this since the beginning of time. When I was doing my research, when I found this beautiful new terminology of a death doula, of a soul midwife, I was using Google and trying to pull up anything I could. I was finding people in the United Kingdom, in Scotland, New Zealand, Canada, and we've created, there's this beautiful web where we are all connected. And I was amazed at that time. I was not finding many people in the United States whatsoever that I could receive more education from. I'd say in the last, 5 years, there's probably, 20 very well-known educators who are out there and doing this work and helping guide these people, all these people who are just like me, who, I mean, we come from all walks of life. They're chaplains, nurses, CNAs, life coaches, shamans, social workers, who all are finding absolute joy in serving the dying at their last sacred moment. So we're all looking for...
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, please.
It's so evident listening to you that you've definitely put in the time and the commitment to really find out how you can take this to the next level. You know, Scott and I were talking about at the beginning of the show about how there's so much more research going on about dementia and how it's so necessary for us to spread the word across the world about becoming dementia aware, because the more we understand it, the example that I like to use is 25 years ago when the AIDS epidemic hit, there was so much of sweeping it under the rug because there was such a stigma about it. And so what happened is there was this grassroots movement of people that really had more understanding of what this was, and that it wasn't there was no judgment involved, that we needed to work on finding a way to manage this pandemic. And now we really are at the same doorstep with dementia, in the mental stigma that's happening with dementia in that silent pandemic. And then it certainly is a silent pandemic when it comes to death, because we don't want to talk about that either. We don't want to learn how to do that better and manage it. And just like dementia, I want to say that we can't stop, fix, or change the dementia symptoms. We can only manage them. And there's no way we can stop, fix, or change the fact that we're all going to die, and that we should learn to accept that and manage it. And I think that's probably part of your message, isn't it, Heather?
Oh, absolutely. Death is not discriminating. We're all going to be there, right? And then you combine the two, dementia and death, and that's just a subject that really I haven't seen anybody teaching on that. And thank goodness I had taken courses with you and know your way of teaching. I was called to a nursing home before Christmas, just a few months ago. And there was a patient. Her name was Barbara, and she has dementia. She's in the deathing process, and she was agitated, so, so agitated. And they just needed more support. They didn't know what to do. So I showed up, and, you know, she's pulling at things and swatting people's hands, and then she kind of quieted down for a moment, and I was able to listen to her whisper, and truly it was a whisper, and she was saying, "Mommy, Mommy." And so I was able to snuggle over. Somehow she let me over a little closer, and I whispered in her ear. They had told me that her nickname was Babs, and I said, "Babs, do you want Mommy to hold your hand?" And she reached out and just hugged me, and I held her and rocked her and played with her hair like I was her mother, just caressing her and embracing her like a mommy would. And within probably about an hour, she was in a deep sleep, in a non-responsive state, and she died peacefully about 6 hours after that.
Okay.
So for me, what
amazing.
That was
Story.
Is it's
yeah.
Go ahead.
complete your thought, Heather. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you about
that's
something.
That's okay.
You know, one, you
to
mentioned,
me what that
mentioned
is.
The, yeah.
We all get so excited we talk over each other. It happens all the time, Heather.
Sorry, Heather.
It's
go
all
ahead.
Right. All I was going to say is that piece of soul midwifery, of being a death doula and having the practice of being at death's doorway and embracing it, is that you don't have, rather, let me take that back. What you do have is an ability for radical presence. And you're able to sense and hear what needs to happen. So that was all. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to touch on something about sensory, because you mentioned the gentleman earlier, you put on his favorite music, Ray Charles. And so let's talk about that, the sensory experience, whether that's fragrance, touching, a feel of certain things, the sound, these kinds of things. And do you draw on family history or information, or how do you consider what might be most pleasing to someone who may not be able to respond in the way most people call responding, but you and I, and we know, and Laura knows, that they have consciousness and it's impressionable as well.
Yes, yes. If there is family who can give any suggestions of what they like, I had known Alvin long enough, so he didn't even have music in his room when I met him. And the company that I worked for at the time, Elder Concierge Services, we brought in music for him. And I would go through and through and through different musicians from different genres until he could communicate with me that that's what he loved. So for him, that was a long process. I didn't have anybody guiding me on that one. Families can definitely, they can bring in the favorite blanket, the quilt. Oh, she does not like that texture. Often the dying, they don't want any covers on them. You know, as their soul is trying to, their soul and their spirit are trying to pull it apart, the weight of a blanket can feel too heavy. When you're holding their hand, I always put my hand under theirs so that the weight of my hand, and I have small hands, but the weight of my hand is not holding them down. So they are in complete control of the touch. Sometimes you'll touch them one day and be touching their hair, and they're almost purring because it feels so good. You have to be attentive and know the next day they might not like that, as with any part of dementia, right? The key that opens the door one day to a helping and understanding a behavior may not work the next day. So we can never make assumptions.
That's right. It's all about how we make them feel. It's all about the feelings and emotions all through the dementia journey, including up to the end. Those feelings and emotions remain. And you can hear Heather talk about that. It's how she's making that person feel. Everyone wants to feel loved, safe, and secure in any given moment. And so what Heather is doing is she's accomplishing that successfully at a time when they might often be being pulled away from that safety and security feelings to ones of anxiety and agitation. And so it's all about learning how can we make them feel loved, safe, and secure in each transition moment. It's so important that we understand all through the dementia journey that's happening, even up to the very end. It's so important that we take that on as their caregiver. And I love that Heather is so sensitive that she watches their face. If they can't communicate it, we have to watch their behaviors. Maybe they're just moving a bit too much in the bed. Or what are some other signs that you might watch for, Heather, if they're uncomfortable about something?
Facial expressions, if their eyes are twitching, if their brow is furrowed, if their frown lines seem deeper, if their hands are twitching or they're fussing with their feet, you know, there's something that's not feeling comforting in that moment. And so I, from myself, what I do is I completely take my hands off and I just sit and be and just watch. So much about being with death, it really is not about the doing. It's about the being and being present. That is, it's an action in itself without action. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so hard to
being,
teach that.
Being present.
It's hard
yes.
to teach people to be, yes,
active
to
presence.
Be present. And Scott,
yes.
your experiences, share your experiences about that very same thing, because you had talked just a little bit, whatever you're comfortable with sharing, but you had talked a little bit about your first wife and being with her as she passed. Did you see that she had these same kind of behaviors and you were in tune to help her?
My late wife passed from breast cancer that had metastasized over a course of 12 years, and so it was a slower transition. But I was with her in hospice for a week, and she specifically, what was great was that we had sat down with the minister who was going to do what we call a celebration of life through the Unity Church of Christianity, members of the Unity Church in Houston, about what our wishes were, including the music she wanted to have at her celebration of life. Of course, I got lots of eyeballs from family members who didn't have a clue and really didn't know her as well as they thought they did while we were playing Stevie Wonder and so on, but I was too upside down to sit around worrying about that, but I could tell. But yes, she was very drawn to Native American things. We used smudge sticks, and I burnt those for her and filled the air, and you could tell when she was smiling, and certain CDs of relaxation music and sounds of the ocean and objects around her. And I literally saw her last breath leave her as I was holding her. So it was a rather powerful time.
And
it's
a beautiful,
so
beautiful story.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And so you feel like even
yes.
The smudge sticks and burning of incense, Heather, that's all about even smells, the way that makes you feel, right?
Oh, absolutely. Often aromatherapy is a huge part of most deaf midwives' toolbox, if you will. Most of us travel with rose oil, lavender oil, you know, wood blends, whatever it is, and you'll have a good sense. And even for that person who is not able to communicate well, if you just take that little bottle and, you know, quickly take it underneath their nose and see how they respond to it, you know, then you can go forward and use that, but only with myself, at least, only with their permission. I would never use a scent around somebody who doesn't give me permission to.
And it's hard to get permission
myself,
from someone. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get permission from someone with dementia who can't ask them a question. As a matter of fact, asking a question can make them quite agitated because we're making them think.
Right.
So that's
right.
Also the value of having a plan before that happens. So working with the family ahead of time, you know, I want our listeners to understand it's okay to talk about this ahead of time, and if you're not comfortable talking about as the son or the daughter or the spouse of the person who has dementia, then, you know, give Heather or myself a call, and we can teach you how to make a I know this sounds awful, but a death plan. I mean, what do we call that? A transition
that's
plan?
That's exactly what I call it, is a death plan. Oh, my goodness. It can be actually exciting and so much fun, and so many jokes can come out of it. I have what I call a death box, and I've had done classes, and everybody gets a box and you decorate it. And inside this box, you can have all of the wonderful papers of your death plan, the music list, as you refer to, the smells that you love, the kind of touch that you like, the don't dare touch my feet because I'm ticklish. If I can't tell you that, don't tickle my feet, please. You can roll up little notes inside of it. I have notes to my kids and to my friends that every once in a while, and I'm planning on kicking it until I'm at least 98, but this box is filled with little sweet nothings so that when I do die, and if I die before my time, my children know to look for this box and everything they need to know is in it.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
Great.
I love that. So yeah. My idea that keeps popping up into my head is my next edition, my third edition of my book, which probably will be coming out in a couple of years. We're just rolling out the second edition, but my third edition needs to have a whole chapter, maybe a couple of chapters, about Heather and how we need to pre-plan this, just like we're planning all along the way of our dementia journey, and we're fluid and we're flexible and we learn. And I want all of my caregivers, my families, to also feel empowered with this kind of information that Heather is bringing with us today. What a powerful message. So all of our listeners need to become dying aware and dementia aware, become this army. We're going to do this grassroots movement. We're organically grow the education and the awareness and get people excited about helping us all to make a transition with a death box, a death plan, and to ask for help from someone like Heather. You can reach out, and Heather, give us some more contact information. You can reach out to Heather and learn so much about how she can help you and your family, and you can help people all across the United States, can't you, Heather?
Absolutely, absolutely. My website is yourmidwifeattheendoflife.com, and of course that's a lot to write out, so the easier version is heatherlynnmcguire.com. My phone number and my email address is there. There's also a Facebook page, Heather Lynn McGuire, Your Midwife at the End of Life.
And call Heather and start making a plan. There's not a lot of Heathers out there, so you better get on her schedule. We've got lots and lots of information. I'm going to have this information on my website. You can download this podcast to find out more. You can call Heather. You can get her through me. So you can go to my website, laurawayman.com. You can email me at help@laurawayman.com. And we all stand ready to help you become dying aware along with dementia aware so that we can have quality of life, a continuum of quality of life. I think that's kind of exciting. We're almost out of time, Heather. I can't believe it. I knew it would just fly by. So I want to thank you for this very, very special show. And, of course, I always want to give a big shout-out and thank you to Scott Cluthy. He is just amazing person. He just always helps me to guide our guest, and he always shares his heart as well. I want to give a closing thought today. It's about grieving, because all along the dementia journey, we're grieving in different ways. There's unfolding grief, and then there's acute grief. And so I want people to know that the grieving itself is a journey that teaches us how to love in a new way. Now that our loved one is no longer with us, consciously remembering those who have died is the key that opens the hearts, that allows us to love them in a new way. And all along this dementia journey, we're learning to love someone in a very different way as they change. And on this dementia journey, we lose them a piece at a time. It can be a very long grieving journey. And then imagine at the end of life, as that chapter begins to close and we're going to lose a loved one, can you imagine what a wonderful gift it would be to have Heather, a soul midwife, to help you on that transition and to be there and help you understand death, both for that person who is dying as well as for the caregiver, because we have to give them every bit as much support and think of it as a team, the family members, all of them. I know I wouldn't hesitate to call Heather and have her help me. So once again, thank you so much. We know how courageous it is for you to share your journey. Thank you for being with us today. And Scott, if you could just close us out today, and we'll be back on the air next month. So watch for us.
Thanks for everyone out there listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. You've been listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, featuring Laura Wayman. Get your copy of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care and connect with Laura at laurawayman.com, and join the Dementia Whisperer's newsletter. Send email questions, ideas, and comments to help@laurawayman.com, and join Laura Wayman on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. This is Scott Cluthy, co-host and executive producer. Join us next time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman.